G'day listeners, Woz here coming at you. I'm flying solo today. I've been trusted with the controls of the Tradies in Business podcast plane. I'm going to cut some loop-de-loops and do a bit of skywriting while Coxie is is not here in the studio. She may regret this decision, and you might too. And I'm not going to disappoint you listeners. I'm coming at you with a mum joke disguised as a dad joke. And many of you will know that I love to climb mountains, but I don't think mountains are really that funny. They're hill areas. Boom, tish.
Welcome to the Tradies in Business podcast with your hosts, Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Divert your phone and grab a brew as Woz and Nick unpack tips, tales, secrets and stuff-ups from guests both inside and outside your trade. Helping educate and inspire you to break the cycle of gut-busting and money stress and create a true trade business.
Now, even our guest just rolled her eyes today, listeners, at my joke. So I'm just going to jump straight in and welcome Donna McGeorge to the show. Welcome, Donna.
Thank you so much. That the whole dad joke, mum joke thing, the reason I'm rolling my eyes is partly because I'm going to steal it because my dad loves all that sort of stuff. And secondly, it was a classic. It's a classic dad slash mum joke. Nice one.
Classically awful. Thanks, Donna. it's a terrible tradition that Coxie started here some time ago. So I'm not going to be the one to drop it. Now, we're not talking about mum jokes, dad jokes, mountains or hills today, although I could do one of my typical segues into mountains and molehills and meetings, Donna. We're going to talk about meetings. Everyone loves a good meeting, don't they?
You know, they just don't. So anyone who's listening right now, we are going to talk about meetings. And I do love a good segue, by the way, because for some people, meetings can feel mountainous.
Yes.
See what
you.
I did there?
You're bringing the fire, Donna.
I am. I'm bringing it. But, you know, they are a bit of a, well, for want of a far better turn of phrase, bit of a necessary evil. We have to have them. It's how we get work done. It's how we end up collaborating and having the right conversations at the right time. But holy cow, we're pretty rubbish at them a lot of the time.
Now, so most of our listeners will know that I come from, well, a non-trade background specifically. I have worked with building companies. I've been a building rep, and so I've been in and around the trades. But I studied business at uni and financial planning as a mature age student, and I've run my own businesses mostly in professional services and advice and sales. And so, unfortunately, and I hate to think about this. This is going to make me sweat. I'm just casting my mind back to think about how many hours I've spent in meetings. And even worse is how many of those meetings I've walked away from or perhaps even sat during and thought, man, that was a waste of everybody's time, especially mine.
You are not alone, my friend. There is, I'm just trying to think, an awkward moment as I try to remember the rule, you know, that like Murphy's Law, someone's law. I just can't think of the law off the top of my head right now. We'll call it Donna's Law for now. But it's the law that says 80% of meetings are a waste of time for 80% of the participants. Now, I know it bends your head a little bit there, but often when I'm talking to people, I say, you know, what's the quality of your meetings like? And they go, they're great because either they're organising them or they're running them. I say, yeah, but if I ask the other peeps that turn up, is it good for them? Chances are the answers, 80% of them are going to say no, because they are. And there's two probable reasons for this. One is it's a default setting. You know, we've got to answer a question, let's have a meeting. So that's one of them, because there's a gazillion other ways we can do them. And the second one is we just don't run them very well. It's rare that we get training in how to do a good meeting. So, a couple of hills to overcome.
Oh, this is going to be one of those episodes, I reckon, Donna. So I'm going to come back at you with another one. It's about time we actually told our listeners a little bit more about you and your business, Donna. Look, this will make sense in about 30 seconds, listeners, why we think that's been
funny.
Yeah,
it is. That's because that's the name of the series of books that I've got, which is called It's About Time. So, yeah, it is about time. I think what it is, if I, you know, just seriously, folks, what it is about time for is that we thought more consciously about meetings rather than just doing them all willy-nilly, right? So I think this is probably more of an issue, as you say, was in a corporate setting. I see that all the time, the default setting. People pretty much spend 9 to 5 in back-to-back meetings every week. And of course, when do they do their quote-unquote real work? In the evenings when they should be with their family or they're doing activities that bring them joy, all that sort of stuff, all weekends. And so for me, it's like we've got to stop that. So I don't know whether that's as much of an issue with tradies, but what I will say is that, you know, anytime you're feeling like I have not made the best use of my time, it's worth having a look at, is it because you're defaulting to going to meetings or you're spending too much time in meetings?
It's definitely, and I'm going to ask you some questions about how you came to be in this business. Our listeners love to understand who they're listening to on the show. And I think it's something that most of our guests, I guess, bring a really awesome backstory. So apologies if I've just set you up for failure there, Donna.
Oh, no, I've got quite the backstory.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm keen to dig into that. But I think a lot of our listeners, and I know a lot of our clients that we work with in the Tradiepreneur program, are afraid of the time that they think they need to spend in meetings to be a proper business owner, in inverted commas. And when Coxie and I talk to our clients about, you know, people management and doing one-on-ones with staff and performance reviews and directors meetings once a week and all that sort of stuff, you can just see people break into cold sweats and start to have panic attacks about the hours and hours that they're thinking they need to spend in these meetings. When the reality is, Coxie and I are also big believers that short, sharp, and punchy, as Coxie often says, is better for everybody, not just because of the time, but I think, and I'm sure you've got some insights on this, as to what comes out of those sessions. So, before we dig into, I guess, the specifics, Donna, can you give us a bit of your backstory? Did you used to be a lion tamer or something? Or, you know, how did you get to be talking about meetings? I mean, it's a pretty riveting topic.
I wish I was a lion tamer. it's probably more how did I get into the productivity and workplace effectiveness kind of space is probably really where I think my backstory is more relevant. So I was raised by a Navy dad. And so a military family, moving around a lot. I went to 9 schools in 9 years. So I had to be, as growing up, I had to be really good at establishing quality relationships fast, getting up to speed really quickly and getting stuff done. And I was just reflecting with my mum recently about this, around how often we moved house. And she said, yeah, we were really good. We didn't have a lot of excess baggage. We were really streamlined. So, because we could move, you know, probably the most frequently was about once every 18 months we could have done a move. And so, A, you haven't got time to accumulate more stuff in that time, but B, we were really clean about what we would accumulate so we could pack up and move quickly. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one aspect of, you know, I lived a life of efficiency. My dad's he's got a couple of very cool mottos in life which have informed a lot of my work, which is, you know, you're always heading for a ship that's sailing. So from a Navy perspective, you can't rock up to, he finds my world, corporate world, amazing. You can't rock up to a meeting at 9:05 with your latte and your muffin bag and say, oh, sorry, I'm late, if you're going to get on board a ship, right? You just can't be doing that. So that's one of my favorites. And the other one he taught me, and this is quite relevant, I think, generally from a productivity perspective, is if it's predictable, it's preventable. Ooh, and so growing up with all of that meant that I was, you know, when I'd get jobs, I was the one that would just get through piles of stuff at 9 to 5. And other people would be tearing their hair out, running around like chooks with their head cut off. And they'd look at me like, sometimes they'd accuse me of not having enough to do, but I just had the ability to trim the fat, focus on what's important, get it done. And I've been always being, one of my mates calls me the queen of relaxation. I'm really good at the boundaries of work and always have been. So I can just chill out on a weekend or of an evening or whatever. So that's probably, it's not quite line tamer, but it certainly has informed how I show up now.
Probably got some similarities. Trying to tame time and
you know, I was going to say that, but I wasn't sure if that was just going to be another dad joke thing. I'm not a lion tamer. I'm a time tamer.
There you go. You can use that if you like, Donna.
Hashtag time tamer. I'm so stealing it.
Yeah. I've been trying to create a viral hashtag for about 4 years. And so far, all I've managed to do is fail miserably. So,
okay. Well, I reckon maybe hashtag time tamer is going to be the one.
Yeah, it could be. I'll be coming at you for royalties soon.
Yeah, you're welcome. You can go for it.
That whole getting more done in the 9 to 5 and that idea that you don't have enough to do if you've got your veritable stuff together in that period of time sort of leans into something that we were talking about recently actually with our tradiepreneur clients is this idea of, you know, list medals, as I refer to it as, is people getting a gold medal for the size of their to-do lists, and that there's somehow this idea that if you have a short to-do list, then you don't have enough to do, as you were saying, but also you're not, I guess they sound similar, but you're not doing enough. If you're not working 12 hours a day, you're not working hard enough. You know, if you don't have a to-do list 3 pages long, you're not working hard enough, and therefore you're not going to get results. And it's about, I think, this idea that there's a direct correlation between how long we work, how long our lists are, how much stress we're under, and the results we're going to get. And I actually see in wanky entrepreneur land, which is kind of the circles that Coxie and I move in with our own coach and our mentoring groups and masterminds, the people who have the least on their lists actually get the most done. They get the biggest results.
Yeah, look, you know, this idea that we have to be 100% on 100% of the time is stupidly a 200 or 300-year-old working ethic philosophy. It comes back from the Industrial Revolution. And when you think of it that way, it's like, dudes, we've moved on from that. We should have a different ethic. And look, I don't know who your wanky entrepreneurial mastermindy groups are, but I have a similar experience in my world. I've probably earned more money in the last 2 years, but I've worked less. Yes. Hours. And so this idea that we correlate, I mean, I still have, you know, my mum and dad still have a very strong, if you're busy, that means you're successful. So she'll ring me and say, so are you busy? And she's hoping I'm going to say, yes, I'm booked out until October. That's what she wants to hear, because for her, that means I'm successful. But actually what I've learned is unless I build in adaptive capacity, so I need to have space in my world so that if I want to adapt or if I want to take a meeting or if I want to do a project that just comes out of left field, I never want to be too busy to work with. And so that wanky entrepreneurial kind of mindset of go, 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 hard, 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 faster, 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 better, 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 more, more, more is great. And you end up being that person where you call me and say, hey, Donna, can you come on my podcast? And I go, well, I'm very sorry, but I'm completely booked out to October. So I'll get my girl to talk to your girl and we'll make that happen. I don't know why I'm using that voice. It sounds like an influencer voice, doesn't it?
But it's never for me. Someone that uses that voice.
For tradies, though, just for anyone running their business, if you're too busy to work with, you're too busy to quote, you're too busy to invoice, you're too busy to have conversations, you're too busy, and you might be in meetings, and I know we have kind of meandered away from that a little bit, but if you're just too busy, then you're not able to be doing the things that your future self will thank you for.
That's right.
You know, having a great pipeline of work in the system, having even a people pipeline, having a, you know, why do we run our own businesses if we're going to work ourselves into the ground? So today we're recording this today on a Friday, and this is my adaptive capacity day. It's the day where I do interesting projects or take meetings or, you know, talk about things, and I protect it very carefully from work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting you say that. Coxie and I have had our own lessons in business, and it's probably easy for listeners to forget that Nick and I are in business. You know, yes, we're business coaches, we're mentors, we run a program, but we're still learning as well, and we make mistakes and we get burned out. And 2021 was our relearning year, I think, as business owners for Nicole and I. And so we actually arrived at the end of 2021 pretty burned out and over it, to be honest. And it was because we actually dropped the ball on our time structure and honoring some of those boundaries that you're talking about, Donna. And so same, you know, Fridays for us is recording some podcasts. It's spending time doing business training, looking at new tools for leverage and scalability, and a little bit of flexi time where, you know, today I've dropped a meeting in. There you go, there's another meeting. But I've dropped a meeting in with someone to talk about an adventure retreat for some of our clients coming up, and, you know, cool stuff. So we sacrificed all of that last year because we were too busy, and it was ridiculous.
And I think this word busy, I wrote a blog a while back. I think it needs to be refreshed again, maybe, around this idea that busy is the new lazy. And the idea that we use busy as an excuse. I can't go to the gym, I'm too busy. I can't come to one of your retreats, I'm too busy. I can't listen to this podcast, I'm too busy, right? This busy, busy, busy thing. And so I actually, when I hear someone say that, what I hear is, are you too lazy to do the work to plan your life a little better, right? I know it's, I don't say it to their face, I just think it, right? What I say to their face is, and this is what I'd encourage your listeners to be thinking about. Every time you use the word busy, you know, if you're using it as an excuse, I'm too busy for blah, 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 I'd love you to be saying to yourself, it's actually, I can't prioritize that, or I'm not prioritizing that. And so if you say, I'm too busy for the gym, what you're actually saying is I'm not prioritizing my health. If I'm too busy to go to a retreat, then I'm not prioritizing my business and my future. Right. And that's where it kind of hits you in the guts a little bit, yeah. Right? But busy is so, it's just so easy to say, right?
That's absolutely right. So we are here to talk about meetings, I guess, Donna, and I could take us down 1,000 rabbit holes today in Coxie's absence. She generally helps.
Does she normally keep you on the straight and narrow?
She does a reasonably good job of trying to keep me on the straight and narrow. I'm a pretty determined bloke, and I always manage to take us off on tangents everywhere. So I'll try and bring myself back to the whole meeting scenario. They're unavoidable in many cases, I think, and I'm happy to stand corrected on this, Donna. Maybe you can give me some some coaching and some correction. But you know, Coxie and I spend, as you said, I reckon we would spend probably better than 80% of our time in meetings every week. Now that's everything from coaching sessions with our clients to free training webinars for people who have just found out about us, sitting here recording podcasts with you. This is a meeting, you know, meetings with each other, partnership meetings, team meetings with our VA team, meeting with new partners. And by the end of a day, I don't want to see another screen. So I don't have any trouble staying away from television and Facebook and everything after hours, because I sit in front of a screen all day in Zoom meetings, essentially. And we do actually, I wouldn't say we struggle, but I know we could do a better job with our sessions and our meetings and keeping them punchy and valuable for everybody. So can you, I guess, talk to us a bit about, maybe it's the evolution of meetings, and perhaps where your methods and your perspective comes in on that.
Sure. So a couple of things is, I'm going to give you a get out of jail free card on a few of those things, because I don't count recording this podcast or doing a coaching session, because I also coach and mentor people in business, and I don't count those as meetings.
Oh, thank
having,
you.
That you're welcome. Having said that, and to some extent we're following it right now, as I'm just about to tell you, I still have a structure for any time I'm interacting with another human being in whatever context. So it could be like this morning I did a 25-minute sales call. A client, you know, rings me and says, hey, I'm thinking about booking you for our conference. Can we have a chat about that? Well, I've got a little structure in my head that I immediately run that can keep that meeting to 25 minutes. Now, we're not doing a 25-minute podcast recording, but we're still following accidentally or otherwise, well, you can be the judge of that, a little bit of a structure. And certainly with my coaching clients, I follow the same thing. And it's very simple. It's called Scan, Focus, Act. And the reason I love something so simple like that is it's easy to remember, and it's easy to then readjust what are we meant to be doing in the meeting. So the first thing we do, and this is, look, it's, I'm not going to get that technical with you on timing, but I tend to spend whatever time we've allocated, 25 minutes or otherwise, whatever, I allow about half of it for the scanning. So in a, let's say, a 25-minute meeting, I am going to get technical on numbers now, 12 minutes of it will be scanning, yes. About 8 minutes of it will be focus, and about 5 minutes of it will be act. And the reason being is one of the reasons I think meetings end up being a waste of time is we go straight to act. We go straight to what are the actions? What should we be doing? What should we be focused on? And we try to constantly be, we bring into that meeting the energy of go, 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 faster, 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 more, more, more. And so I'm going to ask you to flip it a bit. And I'm going to say, first of all, we scan. Now, in the context of this podcast, that's you and I, you asking me about my background. We get to know each other a little bit on the call. We kind of meander a little bit around stuff, and we just get a sense of what's going on in the context of our world. And then you say something like, right, now let's talk actually about meetings. Or you might take me down another, you know, little meandering path, but that's the focus part. Now let's get into a little bit of the meat of it. And then at the end, you're probably going to say something like, you know, Donna, how can people find out more about you? The act stuff, right? So even in a podcast, we're following that. But in a workplace meeting, I think that there's three key things I think we fail at. One is that we don't clearly define the purpose. And so from now on and for the rest of your life, I want any of your listeners and for you as well, I want you to be thinking as you're typing, or in fact, you haven't sent it yet. You've got your finger over the mouse. You're not sending this yet. And you're going to go, hang on. By the end of this meeting, it would be great if. That's it. What's the purpose? It'd be great if we made a decision, agreed budget, got alignment, moved forward, whatever that is. At the end of this meeting, it'd be great if everyone knows that. Nice. Then we can come prepared, right? The second thing is it the right people? So when you think about we want to make this decision, well, do we have the decision makers in the room, or are we just kind of going to fluff around for a bit and then we have to have another meeting with the decision maker? Go on.
I hate those meetings.
I know, right? Meetings for meetings. One of the reasons I was inspired to write the book was I did a stint with a corporate client, and I told my boss I was having a meeting with someone super senior in the business. She made me have four meetings to prepare for the senior meeting. I'm like, are you kidding? I've got to write a book about this. So here we are.
It sounds, sounds awfully like the public service.
Oh, totally is. Totally is. So I want you, I'd rather cancel. So, you know, I know we're not canceling today, but when I came in and you and I were talking about that, Nick's letting you fly solo today. If Nick was a decision maker, we'd be better to postpone it than for you and I to waste our time when it's going to be Nick that's going to need to help us make the call on that, right? So we sometimes, I think, we book the meeting, and because it's booked, well, we better do it even though Woz or Nick isn't here to make the decision. I'm going to say cancel that sucker, right? Straight up.
Just because it's in the calendar doesn't mean
have to do it, right? And just before I do the last part of it, I'll just do a little aside here. How good does it feel though when someone cancels a meeting?
It's almost a celebration. It's like, oh my gosh, I just got an hour of my life back.
I know, it's awesome. So don't ever be afraid to cancel a meeting, because it's probably you're going to make someone's day, right, if you cancel a meeting. But the second thing is you shouldn't ever be at the mercy of other people canceling your meetings. I'm going to say book a meeting for yourself every day for an hour that you can look forward to, that feeling of a whole hour where I don't have to be beholden to someone, or someone doesn't want a piece of me, or I don't have any obligations. I can just use that hour for what I want. So that's a bit of an aside. Nice. Go ahead, cancel meetings as much as you like. Permission granted from your Auntie Donna. The third one is process, which is the scan, focus, act. So too often we come in. So yes, we've got a purposeful meeting. Yes, we've got the right people. Then we walk in, we sit and look at each other, and the interesting human condition around meetings, and it became even worse when we were doing them online, is unless you tell me otherwise, I have an assumption of passivity. that I sit, my role is to be passive. So unless you tell me what you want me to do, I walk into the meeting, I sit in the chair or I turn on the camera and I just sit back and I just wait for something to happen. And so what that then leads to the person who's convened the meeting having to do all the heavy lifting, or the person with the loudest voice taking over everything. And so when you have a process, you know, like Scan Focus Act, where you might say, so in the meeting request, you're going to say, at the end of this meeting, it would be great if we get alignment on the following, on the next actions of the project. Great. Then underneath, you're going to say, and when you come in, I'm going to ask everyone to do a 1 minute whip around on where they're at.
Nice.
Right. That's the scan. Then you as the convener are listening for what's in common. What are the themes? Is there a common holdup somewhere? And then in the focus bit, you go, well, look, we've just heard from everyone. What I've heard is three things. We look like we've got a supply chain issue here. We've got a blocker here. It looks like some invoices are being held up here, and that's affecting a few of you. And we may be delayed on Project X by the sound of it, which means we need to start to have conversations about Project Y. And so once everyone's done the whip around, you get all that context, you scan, now we can make better decisions. Because if we're not careful, the meeting becomes a waste of time for 80% of participants, because it ends up just being Bob airing his grievances for a couple of hours about something, right? And so that's that. You give everyone that head, and people will show up ready to play if you do that. Now, there's more to it, but they're the three things that I reckon will get you some cut through straight away.
I love it. And it is, for listeners' benefit, the whole podcast structure is something that I learned as a technique, and you know, it doesn't always work out, and I'm a fantastic one for tangents and long stories, and you know, I got my dad's genetic ability to talk for hours about stuff. And so that's actually something that I've had to consciously work on over the years, particularly as a coach, where I'm facilitating sessions where the participants need to go away with an outcome or a clear action or some item of value. Otherwise, it has literally been a waste of time and money. And so the podcasts are the same. We do actually have a structure, probably giving away trade secrets here, Donna, but every good podcaster does the same thing. They have the chit chat at the start. They've got their own brand of lead in, and there's a bit of, you know, a bit of that sort of schmooze and tete a tete at the start, where we set a bit of the context and the scene, and then we dive into, okay, well, what's the meaty bits? And as you said, at the end of this episode, I'm going to give you the opportunity to share your stuff. Where can people find out about you? And we'll probably close with, you know, a quick plug of what we've got coming up at Tradies in Business. And that's it. And they always run to time.
And so if I'm not running a podcast, if I'm just running a meeting at work, then it's the same thing. Yeah. So a lot of people say to me, oh, 25-minute meetings, we can't be nice to each other anymore. Where's the time to connect? I got to tell you, I run 25-minute meetings. Most of my meetings, I would say, are. There's always exceptions. Sometimes we need a bit longer. Of course we do. Can I do a strategic plan in a 25-minute meeting? No, I need a couple of days for that. Yeah. So it's first of all, let's just kind of get that out of the way. Not every meeting is a 25-minute meeting. But I still have time. If I know the purpose, the purpose is the key to unlock all of this. Because if I know, and you put this in the email, so I kind of knew that on our thing today, but in any context, if the purpose is in there, there is always time to say, how are the kids? How's the dog? How was your last holiday? How are things going? To build connection. And then what you just described, what you called setting context, that's scan.
Yes.
Right? We've set a bit of context. Now, boom, let's dive into it for a bit. Now, I'm not going to be the time police. If you want to say spend a little bit less time on scan because there's some really good meat you want to get into and the focus, go for your life. But I would say it is at your peril that you don't put some attention on building connection at the beginning and creating a bit of context, getting everyone kind of on the same page at the beginning. And my favorite is the 1 minute whip around. And here you go. This is for free. I wasn't going to tell you about this today, but I'm going to give you this bit for free, value adding.
Bonus.
You want to, and this is good for one-on-ones, particularly for whip kind of meetings. What am I working on? What's blocking me, if anything? And what do I need help with? That's it.
Beautiful. We do something similar with our tradiepreneurs. In one particular session we run on a weekly basis for them, it goes for 30 minutes. And they actually pre-submit exactly what you've just outlined.
Oh, gee, I love it. I love it when that happens.
So there's some, you know, crazy synchronicity going on there. But these are techniques at work, is to help people get focused. And there's still plenty of time, as you said, for being personable and caring about others. In fact, there's more time for that when we structure the rest. I wrote down the word structure here and underlined it 17 times when you said it earlier, Donna. And I'm a big, I used to be a big fanboy of Jocko Willink and the whole Echelon Front crew from the US, so former Navy SEALs. Listeners might have heard me talk about them before. They now do corporate training and leadership camps and all that sort of stuff. And Jocko, as a SEAL commander, he wrote a book called Discipline Equals Freedom. And for me, it sort of runs a little parallel to that principle that if I'm super disciplined at certain times, it gives me maximum freedom to fluff around as much as I like in other times. But when we're undisciplined all of the time, everything just takes forever.
I would completely agree. And so my dad was not a Navy SEAL, even though he was in the Navy, but he would say the same thing. You know, if I was to just kind of trim that back to a very, and the metaphor may not work, but dad was always the eat your veggies first and then the meat second, or the bit that you eat, the bit you don't like first, eat the frog, I think is the book they call it. So eat the bit first and then, and I'm very much like that. I'm a get focused and get a pile of stuff done. I call them hours of power. I love putting an hour of power in my diary where I'll just do an hour of power and I'll head down, no phone, no email, no other distractions, boom. Then I typically do those towards the end of the day because then I'm free then. I get through the stuff that won't then be on my mind, that won't get me losing sleep and waking up in the middle of the night. Like, and so we haven't talked about that. And you and I are at real risk. We probably both need Nick because I can go down garden paths pretty easy as well. But, you know, when people say to me, what are the key things you need to do to be more productive? I'll always say, how's your sleep? Are you fueling yourself right? And are you getting some exercise? Because if you're not doing any of that, then there's no to-do list is going to help you fix that, right? So because sleep's so important to me, I do my hour of power in the afternoon. So I clear all the stuff that could end up being on my mind.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Cool. So it's a way of giving myself a good, so I do meal planning. I plan what I'm going to wear. If I have to go off site, I'll plan the route the night before so that I'm able to then rest and relax and not kind of wake up with the whole, how am I going to get there? What am I going to wear? Is there going to be parking? What do I need to take? You know, I don't want any of that. I want to sleep like a baby.
It's a good old 5 P's of getting results.
Is it? I'll go on. Tell me that.
Proper planning prevents piss poor performance.
I'm totally
on my language, Donna.
Well, no, but it's funny you should say that because I used all the P's in my book. Purpose, people, punctual, prepared, process, present, participate, produce, and proceed. So it seems that the P words are all about productivity.
Now, I want to just jump back a little bit. Some things that have popped up that I really want to address because they do seem to be excuses, blockages, barriers for trade business owners especially, which is 99% of our listeners. And one of them is the old 60-minute default meeting time block. Every cloud-based or even, you know, every online calendar system, when you go to make a meeting, it just makes it an hour. And that's the default setting. And it seems to be people's mental default as well. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, it actually is. It is our both our systems and our mental default settings. You're absolutely right. So a couple of great things is you can change both.
What?
Yes, you can. So you can change your default settings in your meetings to, I think Outlook doesn't let you do 25-minute meetings, but certainly lets you do 30 as your default setting. And I use a tool called Calendly, which is where I send a link out and people can then book in with me. And I've got mine set up for 25 minutes so they can book a 25-minute session with me. So I don't unless anyone comes back to me and says, hey, I think we need an hour, I'm like, okay. It's kind of a boomerang method, if you will. So if someone comes to me and says, can I have 60 minutes? I'll bounce back and go, nah, you can have 30. So boomerang it back to them. But if they then come back to me then, if it boomerangs back and says, actually, here's the stuff we need to talk about, it's a double whammy. They've now given me purpose. They've outlined a bit of an agenda. They've told me what role they want me to play in it. And sure, you can have an hour of my precious time if you really want to. Yeah. But I think, so that's the first thing you can change. The thing in the book that I talk about is that scarcity plus clarity creates urgency.
Yes.
So if we know we've only got 25 minutes and we're clear on our purpose, the sense of urgency will kick in and we'll run that meeting that much better.
That's right. And I heard something I hadn't heard before, and in 15 years of coaching and mentoring, you hear a lot of stuff. I've heard a lot of stuff. I've said a lot of stuff too. Regurgitated a lot of stuff. But I heard someone talking about Patterson's Law. Mainly with respect to money and finance, and I don't know who Patterson was. He was clearly broke, because it talks about the fact that resources will soak up the available. It was to do with expenditure. So it's the phenomenon where we started our life on a salary of 30 grand or a wage of 30 or 40 grand, and we seem to live okay. And now we're on 120 and we still seem to be not saving any money. And it's like, where is all this extra money going? I used to live on 40. And so it's about that sort of resources soaking up the available time or money.
Well, I don't know. We could be talking about the same person. So I hadn't heard it applied to finances, but I'm very familiar with Parkinson's Law,
okay,
which is about time.
It wasn't
if you say an hour meeting, you and I'll suck up an hour. Whereas if we say 25 minutes, then we just use the available time. So it could be Patterson and Parkinson plagiarised each other.
I think Parkinson's cousin, and they both had the same idea, but Patterson
twice removed
was the one that I heard about. Parkinson is the real one. So thank you
It could very well be. But then look, don't hold me. Like, I could be completely wrong. Remember, I'm trying to remember another. Bartleby, that's the one. Bartleby's Law, just remembered it, is the one that says 80% of meetings are a waste of time for 80% of people. So.
Right. So just whoever it was a smart person.
Yeah, smarter than me. So that's, otherwise there would be McGeorge, the law of McGeorge or Donna's Law or something. But no, I don't have any of those. We rely on Patterson, Parkinson and Bartleby.
Was's Law does not apply anywhere. So I guess the problem is we set these 60-minute meetings, and then not only do we soak up the 60 minutes with fluff, we go overtime because we soaked up the 60 minutes with fluff, get to the end, probably 3 minutes in, and go, right, well, hang on, we really need to address this issue before we go. And next minute it's blown out by 15 or 20 minutes, and then we're late for the next one, and we just have this perpetual lateness, stress, not getting things done. And then people say to me, oh, all these meetings, it's killing me, such a waste of time.
I say, I wonder what would happen. If you just deleted the lot.
Ooh,
now, I know some of your listeners just vomited a bit in their mouths at the thought of doing something like that. But seriously, I wonder what would happen if you just deleted it, like just declined every meeting and just cleared your diary and then just see what came back.
Ooh, right? Wow.
Just see what comes back. Now, I know the head of Atlassian did this. Head of Atlassian, might have been the HR head of Atlassian, actually, because I heard them speak at an HR conference, where they just literally cancelled every meeting out of their diary. And for a couple of days, no one noticed, because the person just didn't show up to meetings and everyone just got along with stuff. And then they suddenly started to know, oh, hang on a second, they've just said no to all of this stuff. So that was one thing that they did, just cancel them all and just see what comes back. And people will be a lot more discerning about what they come back with, because they'll have to just try a little bit harder than just the default. And the second thing this person does is they decline every meeting out of hand, and they only accept the ones that come back with more information. So if you'd booked a meeting with me and it said, hey, Donna, can we talk about Project X? I just decline it. And then you're going to go, hang on a second, I need to talk to Donna about that. So then you're going to reply to me in an email that says, hey, Donna, I see you decline this meeting. I really need to talk to you about blah, 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 blah. And I'm going to go, okay, fine. I'll take
Thanks
that
for
meeting.
Not declining our podcast booking.
No, no problem.
My self-esteem would have taken a massive
but
hit.
But this, I'm going to give your listeners a little tip, because sometimes the meeting is called by, it's outside of your control, right? So it might be a client that's booked the 1 hour. So a couple of things you can do. You don't have to tell them, you know, don't announce at the beginning, excuse me, I'm going to run this meeting as a 25-minute meeting. Don't tell them that. Just run it as a scan focus act and make it a bit of a game for yourself. How many one-hour meetings? Because no one's going to say, let's fill in the time. I'm like, we've done what we need to do on the half hour. Let's just hang out together. Everyone's going to be grateful for the extra half hour you give them back in their life. It's like having a meeting
canceled. That's a great point.
So just run it like a 25 anyway. And then another one, I learned this when I worked in a large automotive manufacturing organization, global organization. And I'd sit down and someone very busy and important would walk in and they'd say, I got a hard stop at 12:30. And everyone would go, oh, okay. And boom, we'd get a whole bunch of stuff done. Now, the hard stop was lunch.
Yes. I was just thinking, I have a hard stop at 12:30 most days too. It's me going and taking a lunch break.
Correct. And but this notion of I have a hard stop at suddenly creates, that's kind of the scarcity, clarity, urgency thing, right? Mm-hmm. It just suddenly goes, oh, well, we better get focused.
Yes.
And so I would say to you, you can, if you find yourself thinking, oh, look, I don't really want to do an hour in this meeting, but it's not a bit out of my control, you could say right at the very beginning, hey, everyone, I'm really sorry, I got a hard stop at 12:30 or 11:30 or whatever.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you just watch how much stuff people will get done in that time.
I love how this lines up with, again, something we talk with our tradiepreneur community members about called time blocking. And that's really all it is. It's just blocking an amount of time in advance for a task. Sit down, and we often encourage people to set an alarm, set a timer with, you know, 10 minutes to go or something, and like be focused on the time that you've given yourself to get the invoice done or the quote advanced to a certain stage. And when time's up, stop and move to the next task. Now that can create its own problems. It's not perfect. Something I want to talk about. So the hour default, we can change that. We can change our calendar. We can put a hard stop in. The other thing that I do hear from a lot of people is, and this is a bit of a limiting belief that I think a lot of people have, but Donna, you're just better at running these meetings and directing people. You know, I find it really hard to keep people on track, or I just don't have those skills, or that's not my personality. What do you say to that?
Water crock. I'll be a bit nicer.
I was wondering where you were going to go with that.
I'll be a bit nicer. What I hear is I haven't yet learned how to do that. That's what I hear. And so because if it's possible in the world, it's possible for anyone. It's just a question of how. And so if you look at someone, so if someone was saying to me, oh, Donna, you're just, I don't know, you're just lucky or you're just skilled or you're just, you know, you've got a natural ability to do whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
Right? I'm going to, well, I'm going to say, no, I've got 20 years, 30 years under my belt with this. And it was my choice to focus on things like productivity, managing time, running meetings, being a facilitator, trainer, coach, whatever. They're skills I wanted to learn. This is the same. So if I was a leader, you know, or a business owner and I'm about to start having a crack at 25-minute meetings, the first thing I'm going to say to my team is, we're all learning this together. I'm going to be a little bit vulnerable and say, I've just heard this podcast. I'd love to try 25-minute meetings. I've never done it before. I'm going to try a couple of processes that the, you know, the guests suggested. And we're just going to have a crack and see how we go. Because, you know, the other P that might be everywhere on, you know, we've got all the P's around productivity. It's practice.
Yeah.
Right. That's that you just have, it's not that you're not good at it. It's just you have not yet learned it. That's it.
And maybe haven't started practicing yet. Because nobody picks up the guitar when they're 7 years of age for the first time and cranks out a Tommy Emmanuel tune flawlessly.
I reckon there was a kid that did that though once. Do you remember years ago?
Don't shatter my coaching.
Sorry, program. There was a kid. I can't think of his name right now.
But in reality, they were probably exposed to it in some
correct
other way.
Absolutely. So the metaphor still stands. I'm sorry, I shouldn't
just
have done
prove
that.
Myself right. There you go.
No, that, it's the it's the overnight success fallacy, right? The Beatles were not an overnight success. They'd spent 10 years in Hamburg or whatever, right? It's exactly that. And so anytime you're looking at someone, I mean, that's a, it's a bit of a victim-y kind of mindset, still trying to be nice. I don't want to make enemies here. But this notion of, oh, they're just lucky or they're just natural or they're just whatever, it's like, oh, come on. And you know, if I wanted to learn guitar, I can go learn guitar. If I want to learn how to do better meetings, you know, maybe I get Donna McGeorge's book.
Whoa, just little plug, Philip Plug. Donna. Nice segue. I'm just going to quickly poke another little reference in here. I love Timothy Farris's perspective on some of this stuff, where he basically calls bullshit on this idea that it takes 20 years to learn the guitar or to speak fluent Italian or whatever. And he's actually proved it. He's a bit of a freak, and he's proved that with I think 20% of something, you can get 80% of the results. It's the old Pareto principle.
Absolutely.
And you can do it in quite a short space of time if you have the intent and the focus and you make the time for it. So
it's the excuse we tell ourselves. I had a coaching client this week who says, I know I need to read more. And I said, well, what's preventing you from reading? And she says, oh, well, I'm just too busy and I don't have the time to read it properly. And I said, what do you mean read it properly? She goes, when I read a book, I have to have a highlighter in hand and I want to underline, highlight and make notes. I'm like, well, all power to you, but that's going to hold you back. So that's like saying that's I've got 100% do it. I said, why don't you just do the 20% bit, just read a couple of chapters. So I'm also a huge fan of Tim Ferriss. And this idea of the 10,000 hours is where it came from. And I heard, and I need to turn around because his book's up here, Malcolm Gladwell. It was Malcolm Gladwell that put that out there around this 10,000 hours. But it got so misunderstood because 10,000 hours, let's say tennis, 10,000 hours is going to get you to, say, a Roger Federer level. But if you just want to have a good hit on the court, a couple of hours a week will do that. So he's also had to come out and debunk this idea that it takes 20 years or 10,000 hours or whatever to be amazing, because you're absolutely right. 20% will get you started.
And
I'm a bit excited. I'm saying here for you, this, I need to put this on a baseball cap. Momentum trumps motivation.
Yes.
Right. So that 20% of momentum, it will be enough to get you motivated to then become the expert should you choose to.
Yeah, I saw a great post from one of our tradiepreneurs. And I know I bang on listeners about our tradiepreneurs, and it is because I love them and I think our community is wonderful. And I am literally humbled by the change that our clients make on a daily basis and the challenges that they confront and smash through with momentum. And a classic example of that is one of our members set a health and a wellness goal. And it's like you were saying, Donna, you know, if you're not sleeping, if you're not moving, and if you're not feeding your body well, then you're not going to perform well in the other areas of your life or business. And so one of their health goals was to actually get consistent with their attendance at the gym. They go and do strength sessions. And for 6 weeks, I think she said, she's done 3 a week for 6 weeks. And I jumped on that and said, that's fantastic. It's now a habit. And so that's akin to momentum. Once it becomes a habit, that's kind of like momentum. And that will smash through the morning you wake up and go, oh, I don't feel like going to the gym. And something in that person will probably go, and probably is already, go, get out of bed, you lazy sod, and go to the damn gym. Because it's now habitual to just overcome that, I feel. And that momentum, you know, when you've been running 25-minute meetings for 3 or 4 weeks, maybe they went 37 minutes, but you're following the, you know, scan, focus, act system, I guess, it becomes habitual and that generates momentum. And then that'll actually smash through a whole bunch of barriers that pop up along the way. That's my feeling.
It totally will. So why I believe momentum trumps motivation is if I'm lying in bed waiting to feel motivated to go to the gym, potentially, I could be waiting a really long time. But if I've set the momentum thing in play, the thing that happens with momentum, yes, it's the habit, but then also there's this weird commitment thing that happens in our head. So your client that's gone 3 days a week for 6 weeks, did you say?
Yes.
The day she doesn't feel like going, she says to herself, well, I don't want to bust my record.
Yes.
Right. So it's not just about I'm feeling motivated. It's like, oh, I've got this record and I don't want to have to say to someone, oh, I broke my streak.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, rats.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right, Donna. So I think it's appropriate on a podcast about time that it's about time that I asked you my magical famous question. Now, you don't know about this, and no guest knows about this question coming onto the show unless they've been very studious and listened to lots of episodes, which I don't expect anybody to do. And you'll be able to, you'll ace this, I'm sure, speaking about tennis. Boom, boom. So, Donna, if you had 1,000 tradies in a room, what's one piece of advice you would love to leave them with?
Sure. Do something every day that your future self will thank you for. Ooh, and like whether it. That is block time blocking, as you talked about, whether it's protecting, going to the gym, whether it's having a difficult conversation, it's what could you do each day that your future self will thank you for?
I love that. I love that. I'm glad I got out of bed this morning and did my movement, because I would have been feeling very sheepish sitting here. Now, you did mention before you are a prolific author. You've got some fantastic content out there, not just about time and 25-minute meetings, I guess, but I get across that whole topic. So where can our listeners go to find out more about you, about your content, about your programs, etc.?
I think the easiest thing is just donnamcgeorge.com. That's kind of the aggregator of most of what I do. I'm a shameless self-promoter on social media. So, and I've got an unusual name. So if you go Google Donna McGeorge, you're going to get 150,000 hits. So find me on social media, follow me. I'm always sharing stuff on productivity tips, thoughts, etc. The books, the three books that I think are relevant for what we've been talking about today is the 25-minute meeting, the first 2 hours, and the one-day refund. And, you know, meetings is about how do I free up a bit more time in my day to do things I should be doing. The first 2 hours book is about how do I structure my day according to the clock in my body, not the one on the wall. And the one-day refund speaks to the notion that why are we feeling overwhelmed, out of control, and at risk of failing at the important things? And it kind of works to this idea, Tim Ferriss would probably love it, the idea of what would happen if I worked half the amount of time but still got twice the results. So it begs the question around we don't have to be 100% on 100% of the time. So they're the three. You can get those from my websites or any good book retailer, online or otherwise.
Love it, Donna. Thank you so much for your time today. Listeners, as this episode goes to air, our Chaos to Control Challenge has already started, but don't despair. You can still register. It runs for 5 days and we've made them 30-minute sessions. So you've got Coxie and I for 30 minutes a day for 5 days. Well, four now if you listen to this on the day it's released, where we're going to share with you just five simple lessons that are going to help you take your business from chaos to control in just 90 days. So if you go to our website, you'll see the pop-up there and you can still register. There is $1,000 worth of business tools and training that you get just for showing up. So do jump on that. And again, Donna, thank you so much for your time today as we finish right on the nose.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Woz.
Thanks, Donna.
You've been listening to the Tradies in Business podcast with Warwick Bidwell and Nicole Cox. Find out more about today's guest, tools for your trade business, and other cool stuff at tradiesinbusiness.com.au.